Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome to the Gastroenteritis Blues. My name is Steve Libman. I'm with Dan Volpone. Emily's not here yet. She'll be with us for the second half of this pod. And with former Liberty baller, current writer for Bleacher Report and author of the book Built to Lose, Jake Fisher. Jake, how are you?
I'm doing well, guys. You know, I do want to say from afar, I've always respected this podcast's name. So it's
an
honor
to be
here. Thank
you so much. Thank you. Yeah. Some people have no idea what's going on. Some people come here to talk about gastroenteritis and they're very lost. And we're happy that you understand the reference.
Listen, the rights to Ricky Sanchez set the bar pretty high. You guys got your show and someone had a show. I think it's now defunct. It's called Talking About Practice, which is also an epic podcast.
Yes.
But the Philly podcast market is strong with titles.
Right. You really can't be right down the middle. You have to be sort of a weirdo when you name the podcast in order to fit in. So obviously, what we're here to talk about for Bleacher Report yesterday, you had a report about Bradley Beal. You reported that he's strongly considering a trade or requesting a trade this week prior to the NBA draft. So that came out sort of midday on Saturday. Today's Sunday. Has anything changed since that was published? And have you been able to glean which way Beal might be leaning presently?
No, I have not, and nothing has changed. I heard that someone from the league said that it could be as soon as Monday. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think there's no clock or date or trigger time when he will decide. I think he's just deliberating. And you know, after that story went out, someone with a St. Louis connection with him, let's say, texted me, adding that, you know, it's definitely on his mind. It's something he's talking about with people. So nothing has changed. There's been no decision and I don't know when it will come, but, and he could decide to stay in Washington. Right. But that's kind of where we're at right now.
Got it.
And so, you know, a huge reason why, you know, obviously we're in the market for a star guard here anyway, but, you know, I'll read a quick quote from your article. Beal does not have a proverbial list of preferred destinations, but it was mentioned by multiple sources that he would welcome joining teams such as Boston, Golden State, Miami, or Philadelphia. So obviously that got all of our attention pretty quick. Do you have any idea how he might rank some of those destinations? And also, you did mention that it would be a league-wide bidding war, which is pretty expected, but how much do you think Beal is basically controlling where he goes, given he can opt out after next season?
So I don't know if he's the type of guy who's like definitely trying to manipulate this market if and when that situation arises. I think one of the people I talked to on Friday who's close to Brad and has been in dialogue with him said that there really is no list. It's like a media driven narrative type thing, which, you know, of course I'll say that. But that he's wanting to go to a winning situation. And that's why I think, you know, those teams really popped up. I mean, there are four teams that are in the playoff picture that have a lot of assets to go get him. And I think, you know, it makes sense that those situations would be ones that he would be welcoming. But, you know, I threw Atlanta in that story, being that they could make a super compelling package to get him. And obviously, Philly fans know pretty well that those Hawks just made the conference finals and they've got a lot of young established pieces. Like that's why this is all coming to a head right now, being that this draft is, you know, considered to be so loaded with talent that having, you know, a number four pick from Toronto, let's say, or pick 7 and 14 from Golden State that's a lot different of a trade haul than, you know, future picks that, you know, the Bucks sent for Drew Holiday or the Nets sent for James Harden, right? So if it's the Hawks, when they already had these established pieces, right, like Bogdanovich or Kevin Huerter or Cam Reddish, I mean, Onyeka Okongwu is someone who has a lot of value around the league right now. I don't know if the Hawks would love to throw him in there, let's say, but and this is not to say the Hawks are definitely going to make a run at him, but I'm just using them as an example of someone who might be an out of the box or less of center, you know, answer here. But, you know, maybe it could get really creative. I mean, the league, like, no one expected OKC to go after Paul George. You know, I'm not saying OKC's going after Brad Beal. I'm saying it could be a suitor out of left field, if you will. So I think those teams are the ones that keep a particular eye on. I mean, Miami's always been linked to him, but I just don't know how long, like, how much value that Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson grouping really has at this stage. But I think, yeah, like I wrote, there's going to be a long list of people looking to at least have a conversation about bringing Bradley Beal into their situation.
So the other lead guy in Washington is, of course, Russell Westbrook. At this point, from what you can tell, is he likely to be dealt out of Washington regardless of a Beal trade? Because there's been some sort of scattered reporting on Washington sort of finally committing to a rebuild and considering getting off of Russ after his 1 year in Washington. So do you have any idea if they seem likely to get off of Russ one way or another?
You know, someone I talked to in the league, I won't get too specific, mentioned that, you know, when they hired Wes Unseld, who was always the loudest name rumored for that situation, with the connection with his father to the franchise and you name it. But even still, this person said to me, a person in NBA coaching circles, like that hire clearly signaled to this person the rebuild was coming. That's not a hire you make to save your superstar, right? Like Sam Cassell is definitely someone who's been mentioned that Bradley Beal liked a lot. And I'm not saying he was lobbying to have him be the head coach, but you know, that would have been more of a hire that signaled across the league, like, we are trying to keep these superstars in place. And I think, as I wrote in the story, the Russ dynamic is kind of bringing the Brad stuff to a head too, being that it was less than a year ago that Russ requested a trade from Houston to get to Washington, because from everything I heard, and Kevin O'Connor, I know, reported this too, and other people probably did as well, that Russell Westbrook requested that trade from Houston because he thought and knew that James Harden was going to do the same thing. And I think this dynamic is coming to play here too. They're both able to test free agency in 2022. And as, you know, we stand here today, I would expect them both to as well. Like Russ is right back to where he was in terms of his peak value, I think, after the strong finish to this past season. So will that, you know, great, you know, will that bring back great offers for Washington? It's difficult, being that he has $40 million on his salary, and you know, he's a little bit older and he can opt into free agents like we just mentioned. But yeah, the Lakers stuff doesn't go away. I don't really know how they're going to get him. You know, the package I heard was KCP, Kyle Kuzma, and Montrezl Harrell, which, sure, and that includes Montrezl Harrell opting in. And like, the Lakers exceptionalism at play here with the Dennis Schroeder sign and trade stuff and the Harrell, like, you can't just think all these players are just going to do what you want them to do to help you get a championship. That's not how this works. Right. So I think Lakers fans and Lakers officials need to kind of readjust their expectations here. And I don't know how clear that's going to be, but with Russ, I think it definitely seems like there's going to be a bigger market for Russ if he does become available this summer than it was last year. Last year, the market was pretty small.
Yeah. Well, and I guess some of that's probably, he came off like a really good last month of the season versus kind of a disastrous playoffs in the bubble.
Definitely. The NBA is a what have you done for me lately league. And you can be the worst player in the league one day and the next week be like a top 50 player. I'm not saying Russell's the worst player in the league, but all of a sudden you'll be valued as a top 50 player. That's kind of how the NBA works. It's a very amnesia, short-term memory marketplace.
So assuming, you know, it sounds like if Beal's gone, Westbrook probably asks out, and based on that, there is at least some way you could argue that Ben Simmons fits in Washington. But the other package that I think, you know, at least, you know, Steve and I have talked about that we think probably makes more sense would be, you know, sending Ben to a third team and sending, you know, all the Sixers picks, the third team's picks, and a couple of our young guys. And that's kind of a Beal or Lillard package. But what do you think, you know, in terms of what Washington's looking for? Is there more of like a full-on rebuild, like something, I don't want to say like what the Sixers did, because I'm, who's to say if they'll commit to it for, you know, more than an offseason, but something like that versus, you know, getting, you know, a 25-year-old who's been an all-star back and kind of accelerating in that way, you know, along with picks, but fewer picks.
Yeah, I think, you know, objectively, it's, I think the Boston Jaylen Brown package, if that were to become, you know, available, I think that might be a little bit better than Ben. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately for Philly fans, Jaylen Brown is just a better, you know, sure future player at this point, and current player too. I think that they have less at play. Like the Celtics don't have, they only have their picks in the future. They don't have this year's first, obviously, that went to OKC already. And, you know, they don't have that trove of future capital that Danny Ainge was flirting with moving for so long. You know, the Memphis picks are gone. The Clippers pick from trading Doc all those years ago, that's gone. So that limits them too. And I think all those picks that they used, like Romeo Langford and, you know, Carson Edwards and Tremont, like those guys aren't as appealing as Tyrese Maxey or Matisse Thybul, you know? So it's kind of a mixed bag of what offer would I think would be better, if you will, for lack of a better term. But Jaylen, I do think, is probably you know, someone anyone in the league would prefer to have over Ben, really, at this point. And I think that's been reflected in the offers Philly's been getting or the discussions they've had. I'm writing about that. I think it's coming out today. And Colin Newbeck kind of already scooped me on it a little bit in establishing where the market is for Ben right now. But yeah, all that being said, he's a 24-year-old all-star who is, you know, he was the runner-up for defensive player of the year and is an absolute animal on that side of the court. And, you know, OKC is like, there's talk about the Shea fit their timeline, but like, the Wizards already have a bunch of young dudes. They've got Rui, they've got Denny. They'll have potentially, you know, picks coming back this year. I think having someone like Ben, who is more of a distributor, could be something that's appealing to them in terms of getting the ball to all those young guys and helping give them reps and getting them, you know, developmental opportunities. That was the big Michael Carter Williams trade, you know, stressor for a lot of people in the organization when they moved him back in 2015, right? Like, who's going to be the guy to get all of your young pieces the ball and put them in positions to succeed? So maybe that type of role for Ben is something that would be appealing to Washington.
Okay.
So today's Sunday, you alluded to just sort of, you know, you're sort of at the mercy of whenever Beal decides to make this decision. And in terms of whether it comes early in the week or late in the week, it seems like the deadline that we're looking at is Thursday for the draft, probably from both of their angles. Like, do you think that there's anything that Washington would try to do to accelerate that decision so that they can, you know, really do an actual bidding war if he wants out, so that it's not Wednesday and they have to do all of this before the draft? Like, do you think that there's any interest on the team side to do this sooner rather than later? And would you expect somehow for this to be kept under wraps if an agreement is met that they're going to part ways, or just sort of the nature of today's, you know, NBA media landscape that it will get out to the public?
I don't have that answer, unfortunately, how it will come out or not. But I'll say the timing, I don't think is really, like, I don't think there needs to be like a Wednesday at noon deadline type thing. Mm-hmm. Because the way NBA trades kind of happen, typically they happen over months at a time. And I think, you know, look at we mentioned that the Boston had already traded their pick already, right? So that deal with Al Horford and Kemba, like, that happened like that on the surface, right? But I mean, it seems pretty clear from A, talking to people on the league, but B, just knowing how this stuff operates, like, they were probably talking about that package back at the trade deadline. and you know, just re-stoke those coals and hashed out the particulars and what have you. Like I'm putting this out in a couple hours that New Orleans and Memphis are kind of haggling over a deal right now to move up from 17 to 10 for the Grizzlies. But something with, I would send Eric Bledsoe back to Memphis, but like it hasn't happened yet. And yesterday, all these people were texting me like, "Hey, check in with New Orleans and Memphis. Like they're close to a trade." And then when I texted people involved with the trade, they're like, "It's not that close yet." But that being said, like when Thursday comes around and New Orleans is on the clock, like that deal could happen in 2 minutes. So all that's to say, I think if Brad makes this decision, you know, Thursday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, or, you know, right as the draft is happening, it'll make Washington's phone lines light up and it'll be a much more stressful, chaotic evening for Tommy Shepard and his front office. But don't necessarily think it'll be that difficult, because also they'll be operating a position of power right away. And they'll say, "Look, the clock is ticking on all these picks. Make us your best offer and we'll go from there." And I think those best offers to wind this down from what I was all kind of explaining, like those best offers, I'm sure Washington has already heard the framework of all of those. I'm sure Daryl's already gone to Washington and pitched what his Ben Simmons, you know, package would be. So, and Toronto has been calling left and right around the league, as I wrote in that story. They've been calling about trading up. They've been calling about trading back. They made an offer for Damian Lillard. Like I'm sure, you know, they've already kind of discussed the frameworks that would happen here. So I don't think it's really like a big deal, the timing on it.
Got it.
So, you know, there was some shit talk, and then Beal was pretty complimentary after the series of Joel. Do you know if they have any kind of relationship? And, you know, I know it's been mentioned, I think you mentioned it, that him and Tatum have a relationship. But do you know, on the Sixers end, if he has any relationships here, like with Joel maybe?
Yeah, the only real tie I'm familiar with is I do believe Joel is still fond of Drew Hanlon, and Hanlon is one of Bradley Beal's closest friends and trainers, and you know, they're always in the lab in the off season together, all that type of stuff. So that's the one obvious connection. And I mean, I do think generally across the board, Joel is a pretty beloved guy in this league. And I mean, how can you not love him? And I think he's, especially when you're in that all-star stratosphere, you know, that Hooper basketball player conversation came up this week. Like, I think at that level, at that top all-star level, like those guys care about dudes who just like put in the work and love the game and want to get better and like don't give a shit who's across the court or who's with them. Like they view themselves as, you know, an alpha and a guy who can win anytime he steps on the floor. And for that, like, I think Joel probably has the respect of everyone in that top tier, just being the work he puts in, how good he is, and the kind of, you know, he's clearly someone who wants to win. So
do you have time for a couple more questions before we get you out here? I know that.
Let's do it. All right. Yeah, why not?
All right. So Spike Eskin of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, he tweeted a sort of a hypothetical that I thought was a little interesting yesterday. He basically tweeted about, what do you think about the likelihood, or like, as a Sixers fan, would you take Beal if it meant taking Westbrook as well? Now, that would sort of, if you're Washington, from Washington's angle, that would suggest that they're dying to get off of Westbrook and they will attach him to Beal and take, you know, probably a bit less of a return. Like, to me, like, basically, what do you think the likelihood is of Washington looking to do something like that? Or do you think that they'll just trade Westbrook for what they can and maximize the Beal return completely if he asks out?
I just want to take one moment to call out Spike on air. It, clearly, he deleted all of his old tweets because he only has 658 right now. And you know what? That's a power move when you're going to a new job. So I respect it.
Smart.
You know, I definitely – I'm scrolling through all of his tweets now. This is funny. I definitely think, you know, bringing back Russ, quote-unquote, is – a requirement to getting Bradley Beal. You do the deal. I mean, it's just right. Bradley Beal is, I mean, I was talking to a coach about him just in my conversations last week, and the reason why he is such an appealing piece right now and in general is he's not Damian Lillard in the sense that he's the most like malleable piece that is an all-star, I think, you know, in the league. Like, he's someone who any team could easily incorporate. You know, Denver is a team that's been, you know, considered to be high on him for the longest time. And I don't know if, you know, that's what I'm talking also about. Like, there could be, you know, any team that comes out of left field to go get him. I think it's because he is that guy who can, he's only 28. Like, if you get him on a 5-year deal next summer, right? Like you haven't locked in through his prime.
Right.
That's why this guy is such a hot commodity right now. And if you're willing, if taking back Russell Westbrook, who only has got, you know, 1, maybe 2 years left on his deal, hell yeah, you do that.
Go ahead, Ben.
All right. Yeah. Sorry. I was wondering, like, you know, you mentioned, you kind of compared him to Lillard just now. And we talked about it a bit in the Liberty Baller Slack, but, you know, personally, I would prefer Lillard. I just think he's the better player, but you seem to suggest maybe some teams do prefer Beal now, whether it's age and you mentioned malleability. Do you know if, and obviously right now it seems like, you know, from what we know, Lillard has not asked for a trade. And Beal, if he's traded, will probably be by Thursday. So he's the guy right now. But do you know if there's like a preference between the two generally around the league, if it wasn't for, you know, Beal being the guy now and Lillard maybe being the guy later?
Yeah, I'm writing this whenever it comes out today. I think that's part of why there hasn't been so much traction for Ben, is that, you know, I think they're all happy waiting out that Dame situation too. There's certainly rival executives around the league who are sitting here hoping Dame comes back from Tokyo and looks around at what the Blazers did in their offseason and says, hey, this ain't good enough. Get me out of here. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but there are certainly people hoping it will. And you're right. I do think Dame is higher regarded, if you will. Okay. He's just the guy who's done it. Like, as much as Bradley Beal is hyped up to be everything I just said he was. And, you know, Dame has only gotten to the conference finals once, but like, he has been the guy to like put a team on his back, at least for a round in the postseason or two. And Brad hasn't really done that. And not to besmirch Bradley Beal, but you know, I think Dame definitely just there's a little bit more cachet that comes with someone who's like a true, you know, floor general and someone who leads an offense. Like, Bradley Beal is leading the score in the league, but he's an off ball guy. He's been more and more on ball before, and I think he could be some. I think he could like play de facto point guard like James Harden. Although I think Harden like is a point guard now. That's a whole nother conversation. But yeah, I think sure, maybe Dame has a little bit more X factor, whatever you want to call it, a little bit more ability, but they're pretty close, right?
Finally, you've mentioned that you're writing about Simmons in a way, and we're excited to read that for sure. I wanted to ask you, like, how essential do you think it is for the Sixers? And I know that Morey will give quotes about how they're not going to do it, you know, from a position of weakness, and they feel like they will bring him into the season if they can. Like, how tenable do you think that situation would be behind closed doors? Do you have any idea, like, after what just happened in the Atlanta series, given the optics of it all, and just given the place that the team is at with Joel and with, you know, their window of contention, like, do you think it's a tenable situation to have been on the Sixers game one?
If you want to, people are trying to gamble on this, like, I wouldn't bet that Ben's back.
Right.
But it's for, I don't think they're going to just trade him just to trade him. Like, I definitely want to, I mean, Daryl is an asset guy, right? Like, he's going to want to do a deal that moves the needle further for his team. So I think with that being said, like, I don't know. I do think I was texting someone who worked for the team for years, who just left to go to a different team yesterday. We were saying we were in agreement, but like, both sides would really benefit from the change of pace here. I mean, I'm not a Sixers fan, but I definitely am an Eagles fan, and it reminds me super. It reminds me very closely of the Carson Wentz situation.
He
could probably have an MVP type caliber season in Indianapolis here with the Colts, but like, he wasn't going to in Philly, and I think You know, I'm not going to write this in the story, but I'll tell this to you guys, and you guys can do what you want with it. But like, they haven't been able even to really get in touch with them since the season ended. Like there was an intent to have, you know, a workout plan or whatever, like in any off season. And that's always kind of been the case, that the Sixers haven't really been able to align with a development plan. I mean, and that's kind of what Yaron Weissman wrote at Fox Sports in that big story, right?
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't sound like there's ever really been movement to come together on the same page to do that. And it hasn't really worked this summer either. So I think that's not something that is an encouraging sign for him being in Philadelphia in the future.
Well, and you know, the media speak at the end of the year was all, we have a plan with Ben, we know the right work to do and all of that. So that is certainly something less than good.
Yeah.
Jake, cannot thank you enough for coming on and joining us. We love your work. Let's see, what can we
thank
get out
guys.
There for you? Bleacher Report, obviously, I think by the time it comes out. Yeah. So the book is Built to Lose. It's a great book. We talked about it at Liberty Ballers. I can include that link in here. Anything else that we can tease or get out there for you? Where can people follow you?
Yeah, I'm at Jake L. Fisher on Twitter, F-I-S-C-H-E-R. I usually write a weekly column for BR, but with the draft and all this stuff, it's kind of just, we write as the news cycle is going now. The book is out and live and living and breathing, and would love as much attention and support to that as possible. It's on Amazon, bookshop.org, Barnes & Noble, my publisher Triumph Books. And I talked to over 300 people for that. And you know, a lot of the stuff I do right now is like anonymous sourcing, being that it's all sensitive and whatever. But that book's got a lot of crazy shit on the record from a lot of people that any NBA Twitter fan, any NBA fan who loves drama and gossip and hearsay and rumors, I got a lot of people airing out all the shit. So
yeah,
please give it a read and buy a copy if you are interested. And it's obviously the Sixers are at the heart of that storyline. So
for sure. Again, thank you so much. You're a Liberty Bowlers alum, and it's very nice to have you back in your old stomping ground. So really, really appreciate it. And I'm sure it's going to be a busy week for you. So get some rest, and we'll be reading what you have put out.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, buddy. Jake. Have a good one.
See ya.
Well, that was wild, huh, buddy?
That was a bombshell to leave with. Wow.
We got a bombshell. What do we do with it?
Well, we just, I don't know. We're still recording, so.
We're definitely still recording. Yeah, we'll talk. Anything, I wanted to just check in with you. Is there anything that you want to say about, because the second half of this podcast will be us rejoined by Emily and with Daniel Olinger to talk about the draft, where the Sixers just might not take anybody. But we need to do certainly a draft preview. Is there anything else that you wanted to say about Beal? For me, the more I think about Beal, the more I like him. He's really good, and he seems to improve all the time. And, certainly he would line up with Joel in terms of their age. I do think that Damian Lillard is better than him right now, but I think that Beal is in that discussion of like the players that you would hope to get next to Joel, which is a guy on the perimeter who can just get a bucket at any time. And I would be really, really thrilled to get him in Philly. How do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in a position where, like, when it comes to perimeter scoring and like all around perimeter creation, like we can't be choosy here. And
right,
I would, if you said like, which would you want? You could have either, which is not the case. I would want Lillard. He's only, I think, what, 2 years older. And he's, I think, a good bit better. He's the biggest difference is his shooting. He takes a lot more threes and makes a lot more. And I know, you know, basically we have this discussion, you know, with some of our friends at Liberty Ballers, but you know, the Sixers don't necessarily have a need at shooting, especially Ben's gone, don't have a need at shooting. But that doesn't change the fact that like it's important to be a good shooter in basketball, even if it's not your team's primary need. Like if you're talking a 40% three-point shooter on like 10 a game versus, and that's Lillard, versus Beal's like, I think, less than five at like mid-30s.
And I think he's 35% on six. I'm checking though.
But so you can correct me because I'm sure that wasn't exactly right. But yeah, either way, big difference. And so for I think that's a big reason I prefer Lillard. But really, I mean, I would be very excited to get Beal at this point. I think that I was hesitant to do like a Simmons and a lot of stuff for Beal trade last season, like after we missed out on Harden. I thought the team wasn't really there. I thought that, you know, Simmons was still a year younger. And I didn't know Joel was going to take this leap. But all this, I mean, Simmons has gone another year getting arguably worse. Embiid has gotten a ton better. Tobias is better than we thought he was. The young pieces are now assets and they're good if we somehow get to keep them. And Danny Green's been, and Seth Curry have both been really good additions. So I think that the team's in a place where you do go all in for either. And I don't think the difference between Beal and Lillard, and some people might prefer Beal and disagree with me. And I think that just shows how relatively small the difference is. And I would absolutely not, you know, say like, well, let's hold out for Lillard and not really go all in on Beal. Like I'm giving, it's kind of like a max contract, right? Like the Sixers, you know, in a max contract, you have a certain amount of salary you can offer. And I'm viewing these trades the same way. Like with these two guys, these are max guys. You're pushing all your assets out there because these are the guys that are worth it. These two guys are the two guys available who are worth giving all of that for. You know, the Simmons, the picks, the young guys that they ask for. And I view them in the same way. Like this is all we can give. Someone, maybe someone tops it, but for us, this is our max. We need to offer it for both. And so, yeah, I would be thrilled to get him. And I do think he's worth it. And I do think he makes us a lot better.
Yeah. So just for the listener, right now it's about 9:45 a.m. on Sunday. Jake talked about this piece that he's dropping today about Ben. If that comes out today at some point, we'll definitely talk about it this evening when we're back together and we do the second half of the podcast with Dan and Emily. But yeah, for now, that's it. Jake was really great. And I thought that he had a lot of very well-informed things to talk about there. So yeah, that's it for now. We'll be back with the second half of this podcast. And then, yeah, so we'll talk to you soon. All right, buddy. Have a good one.
See you. Well, for everyone else in like 5 seconds. All right, so now we're back. Emily is still not here. People are skipping ahead as I say that, but she's not here yet. She'll be here soon. But with us now is Daniel Olinger, of course, of Liberty Ballers, and he hosts two podcasts for us. He hosts co-hosts with Sean Kennedy, the Talking About podcast, and he hosts the Sixers Draft podcast, both of which are great and very successful. And you're here mainly to talk about the draft, and we'll get to lots of draft stuff, but you know, we'll also hit on some NBA and Sixers stuff before that. Anyway, how are you, Dan? I social media tells me that you ran a lot of miles yesterday. Tell me how that went.
Yeah, Steve, great to grateful to have that you guys are having me on today. Love the show, obviously. And yeah, I ran a half marathon yesterday. Me and my sister decided that we were going to do it. I just kind of like running in general, something I've got into while probably training for sports in high school, and just I don't know, I just do it a lot now. Went pretty well. We both finished top three in our age group, which was cool.
That's great. Congratulations.
Yeah.
That's very impressive.
Yeah, although it's like, because it's like I ran like an hour 37, which is pretty good. But like the guy, I forget, whoever got first overall did it in like an hour 20, which I don't even know how. Like just that's just zooming for 13.1 miles.
That's wild. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm excited to talk Sixers. Excited to talk about it.
So, all right. So, Dan Volpone and I have decided that we're not done debriefing from our thing with Jake, and we just told you about it. By the time people are hearing this, likely there's about to be a piece on Liberty Ballers about it. Just relaying what Jake said that was unreported, which is basically that the Sixers can't get in touch with Ben Simmons at all. And meanwhile, I told my mom this downstairs. I leaked it to my mom, and she was like, "Well, is he okay?" And I go, "No, he's on social media. He's fine. He's not like, he's not a missing person. We just so
Volpone, where do you want to go with this? How have you been thinking about it? What do you think about the Sixers not being able to get in touch with Ben Simmons?
I mean, yeah, like for the, like, this is going to sound very back to back on the pod, but for the listener, we talked to Jake at like 9:15, 9:30 a.m. And it's now 8:45. So it's been, you know, 11 hours,
yeah,
almost 12 hours. And I've been thinking about it a lot. It's a really bad look. And like, I don't think either of us are particularly surprised by it, but I think it's surprising to hear that they're not even pretending. If that makes sense, like, I'm not surprised. Like, Ben had always seems like, you know, your own reporting really touched on a lot of this right after the season ended. But basically that, you know, he didn't want to work with the team trainers. He wanted to work with his own people, with his own, you know, brother for a shot coach. Neither of us were too pleased to hear that. But you hear about, you know, Doc and Daryl saying they have this plan for Ben.
So I'll read you their quotes. Yeah.
But you would think at least, like, Ben would at least be pretending, like, because he still has a lot of years. He has 4 years left. It's not like he can just ask out and he has, you know, a ton of power, like, you know, the six is now or never to trade him. So it's so, and his value is lower than ever. It's not like teams are knocking down the door either. Like, if one team, the first team that steps up could easily get him. And we're at the point where no one has even stepped up to meet that value. So, like, for him to still be kind of blowing off the team is pretty shocking. And it just makes me think that, like, yes, the Sixers seem to want him gone, but all of, and we were pretty sure that Ben wanted out, even if he wouldn't, like, make a public scene and request a trade, because right now his value is low and it would just be a really bad look. But I mean, this to me is just screaming, I do not want to be back.
All right. So I'll read you. These are the end of the year quotes from Daryl Morey and then, or from Doc Rivers. And then I'll read you the ones from Daryl Morey. And now this is, a lot of people, of course, would respond to this by saying, well, what are they supposed to say? Like, are they going to say, we're going to trade Ben, we'll never talk to him again? Probably not. But this just seems like a stark contrast from where they were to where they are, because given the way Jake phrased that, it sounds like the Sixers have made efforts to at least be in touch with him, text
exactly
him.
Yeah, it's not like they're both, it's not like they agreed start of the offseason, we won't talk, Ben's gonna do his own thing, we're gonna find a trade for him. It's like Sixers trying to contact Ben not picking up the phone is what it sounded like to me.
Well, all right. So I'm going to read this bullshit, and then I'll also talk about the birthday stuff, and then Daniel Olinger. I'd love to hear your thoughts on all of it. So Doc Rivers said, I believe, without going into detail with what we're doing, I believe we know what the right work is and the right type of work and the right way to do it. What the fuck does that mean? You can go do the work all the time, but if it's not done in the right way and it's the right type of work, you may not improve. After being here for a year, I really do believe we've identified what and how, and now we have to do the do part. That's how it's written.
That sounds like a parable.
Congrats to Doc for being the first one to realize Ben needs to learn how to shoot. That's really big. I wish Brett could figure that out.
It sounds like he's trying to fill out a word count when I read this. we have to work to do it. It's not going to be an easy job, but it's definitely a job that Ben can do. I guess the job is basketball. here's Daryl Morey. I don't have the full quote, but just in part, and this is thank you to John Clark. And that first thing I read was reported by Tim Bontemps at ESPN. This is from John Clark at NBC Sports Philly. Daryl Morey on Ben Simmons being willing to fix the free throw shooting and whatever the Sixers' plan is. Quote, my understanding is Ben is all in on the organization, I believe, and we would expect the players to do whatever is necessary. Some context for all of this would be the birthday stuff. Ben's birthday, one day before mine. Don't worry about it.
Happy birthday, Steve.
Thank you. Ben was had his first social media sighting on his birthday. He said, reflecting back, I've experienced some amazing highs, and with that, some of the lowest lows. Life's a journey. I'll always remain relentless and remain human through it all. Here's to my 25-year #relentless pursuit, doing what I love on my B-day. I'm blessed. personally, I don't really have an issue. That seems like a fine birthday post, whatever. Yeah, sure. And then Ben Simmons retweeted a bunch of messages from his birthday, including from the NBA and from the FaZe Clan, which I refuse to ever learn, much like NFTs. I will die.
Dan is young. Dan could describe FaZe Clan.
I cannot describe FaZe Clan because I don't really play video games that much.
Is it? But you know as much as I do then that it is a video game thing.
Okay, so it is a video game thing. We've narrowed it down at least somewhat. And then sort of the cherry on the top. Now, I believe that no Sixer publicly wished Ben a happy birthday except for Shake Milton. Joel Embiid did not wish Ben a happy birthday on social media. Now, he doesn't usually. I don't think that he really does that for anybody, except for maybe his fiance and his son, and apparently Sixers minority owner Michael Rubin.
Which was the next day, right?
This was the very next day, the day of my birthday, actually. He posted a picture with Michael Rubin saying, "Happy birthday, my brother. You are getting old. Love you," at Michael Rubin. All right. So, Olinger, give me your take on the thing that Jake told us, you know, that quote, as it lays in the context of all of this stuff. And do you think the social media stuff is something or nothing, basically? So however you want to take that.
So I would say the social media stuff, honestly, I'll just start with that because I think it's easier to touch on. Yeah. I honestly, like, I think it's funny, but I don't think it really means anything, basically. Uh-huh. Like you said, Ben's post was pretty normal. It's guy on his birthday. Then Embiid, like you said, is hardly ever doing it. And he clearly has a really good friendship with Michael Rubin, though. It's just what he does. I don't think it was intentional by Embiid, like, how it was taken. It was one of those, like, I was about to say right place, right time. Might have been wrong place, wrong time, however you want to phrase it. Like, just I think it's kind of just a coincidence that ends up looking kind of funny given the situation. Mm-hmm. Obviously, what Jake told you guys is much more important to the Sixers' future than that. You know, I don't know if I want to assign blame or anything, but it's just really pointing towards, like, yeah, it's the trade's probably going to happen because – I mean, trades are more likely to happen when you, I guess, have a relationship currently if you don't have a relationship currently with the team, it seems like. And I mean, I can understand, like, because you obviously, like, we know why the Sixers would in theory want Ben Simmons to be traded. Like, if Ben Simmons himself wants out of Philly, like, it's just because, like, you think about it, these athletes, they get to where they are, they're all incredible at what they do. They all probably, because in Ben's mind, it's probably like, oh, if I was in this situation with X players, X things are different, I could be great and we could be winning titles. Like, because that's basically almost every player in the league is that confident. That's how they get there, is they're ridiculously confident in what they do. That they, not like being on, like being above all forms of criticism, but like understanding that, you know, they have to just believe in themselves that they can overcome that. And it's like, after failing this many times in a row with the Sixers, they're kind of assuming that the problem's the other. Obviously, the Sixers and most fans, most people watching them, think that Ben is probably more the problem than the Sixer situation itself. But yeah, it's just, I mean, my main takeaway would be like, yeah, the trade's probably happening. I don't know how you could say at this point it probably isn't.
Yeah. For me, it makes me think back to that report from Woj, who, this was now probably a month ago, I think, or a little bit more than that, 6 weeks maybe, where he said that Rich Paul met with Daryl Morey in, I think, Chicago at the time, where they were for the draft combine. And they were meeting about the future of Ben Simmons.
Do you think they brought Adele?
Yeah, that's right. We haven't talked about that. Rich Paul is dating Adele. What a lovely thing for both of them. I hope it's very good. And I remember saying at the time, I hardly ever remember any scenario where a high-powered agent meets with the team of his embattled star about the future, and the result that they reach isn't, let's move on. Of course, within that report from Woj was all of this sort of media speak about how the team is, you know, excited to build around Simmons and the core and blah, 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 blah. This report from Jake and many others that have come out just about from Shams about how they're openly fielding offers flies in the face of that, in the face of like any sort of resolution with Ben in Philadelphia. I don't blame anyone involved for wanting to move on from the situation. If I was Ben, I would fucking want to stop playing basketball in Philly too. Like, you know, it's not fun at this point. And certainly there's lots I blame him for, but on a human level, I would also like to see what it's like in fucking Minnesota. Dan Volpone, anything else on this Ben thing before we move on to some other stuff?
Not really. One thing I will say is, like, I think there was a big, I don't even know what to call this, but it was definitely talked about by Ben and Joel that they're a lot closer than ever. Like, they were always fine on the court. They never hated each other, but now they're buds. Like, that was the whole thing coming into the season. And, like, I don't really care at all what anyone posts on social media, but it just seems like there's not a lot of support for Ben from Joel at this point.
And well, the thing it made me think is, like, sometimes you're not a birthday poster guy. Like, sometimes you just don't do that thing. Like, maybe you post once every 6 months, or it's an Under Armour thing.
Unless it's one of my siblings, I don't post for a birthday. Sure. Usually. Yeah.
The fact that he tweeted the next day about the birthday of somebody in the organization, and I find it hard to believe that it's totally lost on Joel the optics of that.
Okay, I think he wants him gone. I really do. Like, I think that Joel has been, let's put it this way. And, like, here's one time you'll hear me, and I think I mentioned this before, like, I will agree with the pro-Ben camp on this, which is that Joel's comments, right? You know, everyone, the people were defending Joel after, a lot of people saying, like, oh, Joel, if you have to look at the whole quote about, you know, the turning point in the game, which was Ben's pass, and then other stuff. And, like, he didn't say it was just that. It's like, no, like, I think the Ben people are right. Like, Joel was mad about that. And called that out. He said other stuff after. I agree with the Ben people. Joel is calling that out. So I do think that, like, I've never heard Joel really place the blame on anyone else publicly. Like, I'm sure he was not, you know, Daryl came and I remember when the Sixers, you know, signed Daryl to a contract and Daryl tweeted out the screenshot of him on FaceTime with Embiid. I bet Embiid was like, trade Horford right then, like, first conversation. I have no doubt. Yeah. But when it comes to, like, publicly calling out a teammate, never heard it from him before. And I think I agree. And if you want to criticize, that's fine. I mean, I'm not going to, because I've been frustrated with Ben too, but I think that, you know, it's generally the right read that he is pretty fed up with Ben and is probably not wanting him back and has probably made that clear to the organization.
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, I was just going to say, like, we talk about that, obviously, that play so much, and now it just lives in infamy. And Joel, like I said, went out of his way to reference this very specifically in the post-game presser. Like,
yeah, he wasn't asked what was the turning point. He went out of his way to say.
Yeah, but it's also like, going out of his way to say, just quick aside, I was watching, like, Big Ten Media Days for football. It's very sad, but, like, those things get weird with somehow some people. PJ Fleck from Minnesota voluntarily told everyone his ACT score, like, no prompt at all. But, like, just,
What did he get?
Okay, so I'll say it because he did say it on TV. He got an 18, which he brought up to everyone.
Is that good or bad? What's it out of?
It's out of 36.
Whoops. Okay.
He was making the point, he said he has a lot of smart football players. He's saying their scores are way higher than mine, but no one had asked him. But back to Joel Embiid, like, because that play, like, yeah, it was bad. It honestly is not the reason the Sixers lost, like, at all. Like,
the play is just a metaphor, really.
They scored a point on that episode. Yeah, it's just like, it's the metaphorical downfall where it's just like, it just feels like this is painful. Like, because at that point on, you just are having such a hard time believing in the team. Like, you can point to probably at least 10, 20 plays in that game that probably were more detrimental to the Sixers. But, like honestly, Matisse is the one who gets, like, it was not Matisse's fault. He, like, got pitched to that for the dunk. But Matisse, like, kind of gets off scot-free in terms of Matisse's foul of Kevin Herter was probably, honestly, way more detrimental. Like, that, and I love Matisse. I think Matisse is awesome. Like, that one, that play killed them. Like, that one was, like, 3 points for a dude who had him missing all game, and just when they could not give up 3 points like that. Like, that's a much worse play.
Yeah.
But it's just not the same, you know, just to hold the same emotional weight. And also, like, again, it's what are you expecting a Matisse Thabo versus Ben Simmons?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, I do think that Matisse Thabo was fairly inexcusable. But again, like,
oh, yeah,
the series as a whole, the pass is just, capital T, capital P, Emily Cannell has joined us live from Philadelphia. And before we get to anything that you have to say, Emily, we have to say something, which is congratulations.
Congrats, Emily.
Mazel tov. You have passed your OT boards. Congratulations to Emily. We're all very excited for you here at the Gastroenteritis Blues. How are you?
Thanks, guys. I'm good, and happy belated birthday to Steve. I don't know if you said that earlier, probably. Your present didn't come yet, so
that is... a present for Dan and I, right?
Yeah, I got a present for Dan and you.
All right.
It hasn't arrived yet, so at some point I'll share it with you, and then we can probably share it on the podcast as well. So.
All right. Ooh. Very excited. While you're here, so we're at the...
Hi, Dan. Other Dan.
Hi. Can my present be Jared Butler being at 28 for the Sixers?
Sure.
And we're going to find out who that is very soon.
Yes. Yeah. Whoever that is, you can have him.
You guys all saw Jared Butler.
I saw the game that he was in.
He played on Baylor, so you all saw at least one game with him.
And but mostly I know who he is because I watch your videos, and that's mostly why I know who he is.
Okay, but go back to what you were saying.
Emily, so we're wrapping up the Ben discussion. Obviously, we had the thing that Jake told us, and then we were putting it in the context of the birthday posting or not posting, Ben not retweeting the Sixers stuff, and Joel posting about one of the team's minority owners the next day after Ben's birthday. Do you think the social media stuff is anything? And just what is your take on what Jake had to say about how the Sixers cannot get in touch with him?
I definitely think social media stuff is something. I don't know how much it factors into like the actual decisions that are being made. Like, I don't think that Daryl Morey is like, oh, Joel didn't wish Ben a happy birthday, let's trade him now. But I think it's like that would be funny, like get him on the line. But he can't get him on the line, it seems. So
Yes.
Maybe hopefully he can at least get Rich Paul on the line. I don't know.
But
I also just the biggest knock against Ben right now in the back of my mind is that he's not playing in the Olympics. I've said this 3 weeks in a row, but now watching the Olympics, I'm just like, I don't know why you wouldn't want to play in the Olympics.
Don't know. But things are definitely interesting with Ben Simmons and the Sixers. Anything else? So the Bucks won the title. They beat the Suns in six games.
Very good.
What would love to know if anybody has anything to say about that. I love Drew Holiday. I'm very happy to see him win a championship. Daniel Olinger, what do you got?
I'll talk about it some. I mean, the first reaction is like, holy crap, Giannis. Like, that was insane. Like, I mean, if you let the two Dans run the podcast, we could talk forever about Chris Middleton. He was very
That's
good.
Right.
And as much as I love Chris, he was not the finals MVP. Like, Giannis was just unbelievable that whole series. And it kind of does make me think about the Sixers, because I've been having this thought about like the Sixers this past year, reminding me of the 2019 and 2020 Bucks, where they had a system in place all the regular season and it worked very well. Everyone was assigned to kind of like certain spots. You know, Tobias got his actions run for him to either for cuts, to get post ups, to get certain pick and rolls he likes. And Embiid was basically, we'll get you good position through movement to get a spot on the low block and you can do your thing. Seth Curry had all those Iverson cuts run for him and like little pick and rolls that can get him open. Basically, they just had a like very set system that they stuck to and they could win with it. But you get to the playoffs and just a lack of versatility and flexibility can really kill you, because you run into these better teams that just don't get run over by your initial system. And if you don't adjust, you're in trouble. I mean, that was the whole Bucks thing. It's like the Bucks in 2019 and 2020 were awesome regular season teams, like better than the Sixers team, honestly, but like just killing teams the regular season. But as soon as teams had a slight adjustment for them that they didn't necessarily go through, they kind of had struggled to find some ways through that. And like we saw the Bucks this year, yeah, they took a step back in the regular season. And if we can quibble for the Nets series all we want, because obviously like the injuries played a huge factor in that. But the Bucks got better because they could do a little different things. Like games one and two against the Suns, they tried a bunch of different defenses, didn't find out what was working. Then by game three, they kind of figured out the right mix of switching and over and under defense that they wanted to play. And that's because they had multiple things to go to. They kind of trusted in it. So like, that's one thing, the Sixers like becoming more flexible just in how they play throughout the regular season so that they can have multiple things to go to. But I'm also a little less confident just because I look at their players, and if you're especially talking about the top three players, which for the Bucks, obviously Giannis, Chris, and Drew. For the Sixers is Embiid, Tobias, and Ben Simmons at the moment. you guys can argue for all you want. I love Embiid. You guys know I love Embiid. Giannis is better than Embiid at this point. And the main difference is that it's just the handle is a big difference, because Giannis like doesn't make any sense how flexible he is at that size, because he can control the ball in the way that Embiid can't, at least from the perimeter, because just he has more like flexibility. Like Giannis doesn't make any sense when he makes some of those moves, like how low he can get a guy that size and not like fall over. Like it just doesn't make any sense. And the fact that he can control a game like that with his handle is really important. Then Chris Middleton like is better than Tobias. Again, Tobias had a great year. He's not as good as Chris Middleton. And unfortunately, at least come playoff time, I think regular season, you could say Ben's a better player than Drew. I think Drew has more playoff equity, because obviously they're two of like, if you're talking about like on ball perimeter defenders at the point of attack, like Ben and Drew are like maybe one and two in the league. They're like both very similar in that sense. But the big difference, honestly, is that Drew, who even shot terribly most of the playoffs, like Drew never stops shooting. And he also still makes some quick decisions, still can pressure the rim, which honestly, like that's one of my biggest takeaways from the finals, just how much constant rim pressure from like three to four positions matters, because the Bucks could basically generate it from four guys on the court at all times, which is really hard to stop. But yeah, like Drew just constantly at least forcing teams to guard him in that sense while being such a monster defensively. He's a little bit better than Ben. And that's what my worry for the Sixers is, they would have to follow a similar archetype to the Bucks, but I just think they're a little less talented. Sorry for the long ramble, but that was
overall takeaway. Emily, do you have anything on the Bucks winning the title?
Not really. I just think my favorite thing from the Bucks winning the title was two things. One, Giannis dancing, like as he came out of the tunnel in his glass, in his like champagne goggles. That was really cute. And also that clip of Bobby Portis and Pat Connaughton, I think, when they ask how much champagne that they've had, and they both look at each other and laugh. So those are just two gems that have been like given to the internet out of the Bucks winning the title. So that was my favorite parts.
Dan Volpone, anything on the Bucks?
Well, I'm really happy for Drew, one of my favorite Sixers ever. I had money on the Bucks and had money on Giannis Finals MVP. So that was really nice. That was a nice perk. I do think, and obviously I love hearing Dan talk about basketball because he knows so much about basketball, but I think that Embiid can be the best player on a finals team, which I know Dan didn't say he couldn't.
My like Giannis over Embiid is like saying here is, it's like the difference between unbelievable extreme and like slightly below unbelievable extreme. Like they're obviously two of the very best in the league.
Right. And once, I mean, obviously Giannis is a much, much better ball handler, but Embiid's a much, much better shooter. I think that the Sixers still really have not put the perfect team around Embiid. And I think you could argue that, you know, with the lack of handle, and since they both are best scoring at the rim, that Giannis is still probably harder to, you know, find a way to stop as a defense. But like the fact that walling off the paint will make life harder on Embiid, but also completely take their supposed second best player out of the game is just triple making things difficult on Embiid. And if you get like a real three-level scorer on the Sixers, I just think it changes things. And like, that's, you know, kind of what we've been hinting at all offseason, but like, and it's certainly not a given, but if you could get a Beal or a Dame, like, I think Embiid looks even better. And I think Tobias, like, I don't think Tobias is at the level where he's like, you know, I wouldn't call him a star, but he's like a borderline, you know, borderline on the not side all-star who wants to score from the mid-range. And when you have guys who are in the way, like that makes things hard on him too. So like, yes, he has his own issues. I'm not excusing Tobias for not taking more threes, but like, I really do think that things could be easier on the Sixers. And like, I've had a lot of conversations with Dan where it's just like the Bucks second and third best players were better than the Bucks third best player in the playoffs was better than the Sixers second best player. Like Middleton and were both better than Ben and Tobias.
And just again, like I know I said it like the difference in Embiid and Giannis. I think because again, it's something I've kind of developed like watching last year, something I've started taking into account more. Like again, big difference between Middleton and Tobias is the handle, where Tobias kind of has to, like, unless he has the advantage created, he has to back someone down kind of to get to his spots. Middleton's a little bit better at handling with, like, the ball, someone directly in front of him, just keeping the ball in front of him, and it lets him get to his spots more, though. And, like, obviously it's just, it shows that, like, the Sixers are obviously good, because, like, the Bucks did just win the title. Like, this is a high bar to reach. They're a good team. Like, I don't know. Again, Giannis played what has to be considered one of the greatest finals ever. So, like, it's and, like, Middleton's, like, whole shtick is he makes shots. Middleton goes to, like, bad processes on the court where he does not get to efficient spots. He does not get any separation, but then he just makes it anyways because he's 6'8 and has a freaking high release. So, you know, that's what happens. But, yeah, it's just, like, I can see the blueprint, but I feel like they're still just a few steps away. But maybe that's just the pessimistic Sixers fan in me.
I will say, I just want to say two quick things about the finals. One is that it was not, watching Giannis win a title is not a sign to stick to it with Ben Simmons. I don't think that they are analogous on the basketball court as people think they are. And Derek Bodner said this a lot more eloquently and succinctly than I can. So I'm going to read that from Derek, who tweeted, "Too many people think Ben Simmons can be Giannis. He can't, not even with the same mentality. Simmons has never had touch, length, body control, or strength at the basket Giannis has. Expecting Simmons to develop into Giannis distracts from the real progress he could and should have made. Simmons and Giannis share similar weaknesses, but not similar strengths, not at all." I think it's a very good way to say it.
Yeah, Derek's writing that, like, yeah, that's not any criticism from Ben. It's like, did anyone just watch what Giannis did? Like, was Giannis is, and, like, Ben's a very good athlete, obviously. Ben is upper-tier athlete. Again, Giannis doesn't make sense the way he's, like, constructed physically. He should not be able to physically do what he does.
He hyperextended his knee, like, a minute ago, and he's, like, he's a freaking idiot. It's unbelievable.
And, like, one of the big differences, too, is, like, Ben's a good leaper, but Ben, like, takes time to, like, Giannis at that size, like, gets off the ground so quickly every time. Like, you watch that block he made. Like, Ben's made some incredible defensive plays. I don't think anyone in the NBA can make the play Giannis made where he's pressuring the guy throwing the lob from the elbow, turns around and just rejects the dunk at the rim. Like, the amount of, again, length, like, Giannis has a longer wingspan. He loads quicker and he's a little bit taller and then still all packing, like, the same strength, probably even a little more than Ben. Like, yeah. And that's, again, no knock on Ben. It's like Giannis is, since LeBron's probably declined slightly physically in age, like, Giannis is probably the best, like, raw athlete in the NBA. That's just the nature of it.
Yeah. And the other thing I'll say is, like, I do think that Brooklyn would have beaten the Bucks, and, like, Kevin Durant's foot being on the line, like, maybe that is the difference between, like, Giannis can never make it work, Budenholzer's fired, and, like, the Bucks have won the title. But they, like, capitalized on it. They, like, credit to them, shit happens every single year and they capitalized on it. Like, the Sixers had this wonderful path lined up for them and they could not take advantage of it.
Yeah. Losing in seven to the Nets, which was possible. They didn't do that, right? But, like, you know, even if you want to make the argument, you know, that, like, oh, they almost lost in the second round too. It's like, they played the Nets and we played the Hawks. And right. if we can't agree that that is a fundamental difference in the series, then it's just not worth having the discussion. The Sixers were not close. You could say I don't think they take the healthy Nets to seven, but, like, even taking the injured Nets to seven, I think you could say is, with the way Durant was playing, and even Harden was in, he wasn't right, but he was in, and they, like, they're, that's not the same thing. It's just not.
Yeah, I also just don't think, in retrospect, this should look like a, like, any percentage less of a title.
But yeah, every title is a real title. You
shit
you,
happens every single year. Like, guys get hurt, you know, there's really...
If the Sixers played a Nets team where Harden and Kyrie couldn't play the whole series and barely won in seven before going on to beat the Suns in the title, we would not care at all. We would love it all the same. And, like, again, one of the things I'm most impressed with by the Bucks is just, like, yeah, they struggled a lot. Like, everyone was going at them at the after those first two games of the Nets series and game three, which they should have lost if not for a Drew Holiday spin move. Like, but one of the things I was impressed with the Bucks is, like, just there is something to, like, their mental toughness. Just they were, like, getting beat down. They looked like they were done several times throughout the playoffs, and they seemed like they were very just confident, like, we can do this, we just keep wearing everybody out. They just did not fold, like, the entire playoffs. Even that they get to overtime where Durant hits an amazing shot and they're able to stagger their way through and win it somehow. Like, they just kind of found a way to keep surviving until they really hit their stride those last four games of the Sun series. And they suddenly look like this juggernaut who was just like, the Suns couldn't get anything they wanted. It's like they finally realized all they had.
So the last thing we're going to talk about, I swear to God, at some point we're going to talk about the draft, is Woj and Zach Lowe did a little special today on ESPN where they talked about free agency and trade stuff. They mentioned Ben Simmons. Zach Lowe said, I think his value is at an all-time low. I don't appreciate that.
How could it not be?
He said the Sixers are engaging. Woj said the Sixers are engaging in trade talks, taking offers and making offers. The Sixers are looking for the best possible player in return. Simmons has 4 years left on the deal with me, which means A, the Sixers don't have to do this now. Sure. And also Ben has no leverage to, I guess, steer his market in any particular way. Woj said that things with Simmons could get serious this week.
Please.
Anything, Emily, that you have on that stuff with Woj and Zach Lowe?
Just literally outside of the fact that could get serious this week, I could have written that report just from why? I don't know that any of that is newsworthy, but okay, we'll call it news. Yeah, that's all I've got.
All right, good.
Like, no shit. No shit, basically.
Dan Volpone, anything on that stuff?
Would love for it to get serious this week. Yeah,
how fun would that
be? We talk about this a lot, but I think we're all in agreement that Ben is probably going to be traded. The varying degrees of how likely it is. I think Steve is the most confident he'll be traded. I just really need to see it happen. I won't feel better until we have a truly different team next year.
The other thing that Woj and Lowe said, and also Shams wrote a report that was really echoing, if not copy and pasting, a lot of what Jake Fisher said in his article about how Bradley Beal is going to decide this week because he's going to decide ahead of the draft. Daniel Olinger, anything on the Woj and Lowe stuff on the Simmons angle?
Getting serious this week, it's like the social media stuff. It's like, yeah, sure. Sounds about right. I'm like, unless you tell me specifically what deal could be in place, I'm not really taking too much stock into it. We already discussed probably thinking a trade's going to happen.
Before we get into the draft, one last tiny thing. Daniel Olinger, I'm going to give you a quiz question based on a tweet. You tell me which member of the Sixers universe wrote this tweet. Mapping out a sky, what you feel like planning a sky.
And they're currently on the team, right?
They are currently in the Sixers organization.
I want to look up the team real quick.
Can't Google the tweet, Dan. That would ruin it.
No, I'm just looking at Basketball Reference.
Okay.
Going to the team so I can see all the players. I like to see it in front of me. Danny?
So they're not necessarily a player.
Is it right? Danny Green? Oh, it's not a player?
It could be a player.
It could be a player. It doesn't have to be. When he says in the organization, he means coach, executive, anything.
Is it Daryl?
It is Daryl. I think my
guess for a player is going to be Danny Green.
It's a picture of he's too busy tweeting about the Holocaust. It's a picture of all these banners, and he said, mapping out a sky, what you feel like planning a sky. I don't know what he's talking about. Emily, take it away.
Well, before we get into the draft, I have one more thing. Did you guys happen to see B-Ball Paul training his dog on Instagram stories today?
I didn't see that. I saw his tweet that said, stay focused, which I was like, yeah, you're right, Paul. I will stay focused.
Well, he was focused on training his new puppy today. Wow. And he kept setting up obstacles for it in the hallway, like benches and stuff, and trying to get him to athletically jump over them, but he's too little, so he just crawls under them or squeezes his little body around. And then Paul is like, he hasn't found his athleticism yet, and it was just very cute. So I recommend checking Paul, that out.
He better get the backup center minutes next year.
I love it.
Yeah.
Anyways, to the draft after that segue. So Dan O, because we know Dan B is not the draft expert here.
You guys need to have like two different names for us. Or at least one of us has to get a nickname at some point.
Dano, that works.
No, Dano, I don't want to be Dano.
Too late, you're Dano.
It kind of sounds like Drano, so that's good.
We're going to go with that instead. What is like your just general overall outlook on the draft? Do you think we'll be picking at 28 or do you think we're going to trade that pick? There was a Kyle Newbeck report that the Sixers were likely to trade that pick. So what are you thinking?
Yeah, like selfishly, I don't want them to trade the picks. I'd like to see like as these guys watch them, you get excited about the potential of them and see the pick. Although I obviously understand the rationale of trading it for the right piece. That's probably a little more likely. To be fair, they did have a lot of rumors that they might trade the 21st pick last year, and they decided not to, partially because Tyrese Maxey had fallen there, and they clearly like Tyrese Maxey, and now everyone does, and that seemed like a whole good process in the end. So I would say it's definitely, it seems more likely, especially considering the Sixers seem to be active in the trade market, but... I mean, I would like them to stay there. I do think there is something they can get. Like, I'm trying to think, because obviously, like, there's not a ton of cap flexibility for this team, given how much they've paid so many guys. And I definitely understand the trade where, like, you're not drafting the type of creator, or like, as we were talking about when the Sixers need if you're trading Ben Simmons, you obviously want a high leverage player back. You're probably not drafting that with 28th overall and more likely packaging that with the pick. But I think there's still like things that can be filled out through their bench, through their roster, that can be useful with like this 28th pick, which is what I kind of have looked for when I've been looking over players.
So draft as a whole, top of the draft, do you think there are, like, is there star power there?
Oh, Cade. Cade is unreal. Cade is so good.
So top of the draft thoughts, and then really more importantly for the Sixers, although you could argue with like certain teams picking high, like the Raptors, maybe, you know, things do end up impacting the Sixers with what happens at the top of the draft, but is it a deep draft or would you say it's more top heavy as well?
I don't know how to classify deep, because I probably haven't done, you need to look at like other draft classes to say, is it deep relative to them or not? I definitely think there's a lot of star power at the top. Like, I mean, Cade Cunningham is just very, very good at pretty much every aspect of basketball you could want. Pistons fans probably very happy about that. You know, I would probably take Evan Mobley second. He's just an unreal defensive prospect with mobility and length, his size, everything they can do on that end, how scalable he is to winning situations. But, and that's not even to talk about Jalen Green, who, I mean, me and Sean talked about and talking about a few weeks ago when one listener asked about a package, which basically would be Colin Sexton, Kevin Love for the South to match salaries in the third pick for Ben Simmons, which I thought I could talk myself into if like Jalen Green was still there, because I think Jalen Green is someone who, if you give him an advantage, he can really attack them, because he's like an unreal vertical athlete, and while also having some shooting upside and just having like a lot of physical tools to work with. I could understand like if the Sixers went that route, like he'd have actually a pretty good fit with them, I think, generally. And then Jalen Suggs, like probably like the lowest upside of the four, but also just a very good player. Again, I think a little similar to Cade Cunningham, that I don't see many flaws in his game whatsoever, into like glaring flaws. Definitely has less like high points, and just the nature of being Cade 6'8", he's 6'4", or 6'5", like you're going to have a little less potential in that sense. But obviously some very good guys there. The most important thing is that after those top four, which there's some people on draft Twitter have Jalen Suggs lower in the like toward 10, but like other than that, like those four are all pretty much agreed upon as really good prospects. There's like no consensus from like 5 to like 30 in terms of who is better than who. There's a lot of debate, a lot of moving around, really have no idea what happened. So I'm pretty sure those four are going to be the top four as the four best prospects. But like, you know, after that, it's like as good as your guess is as good as mine as who goes where, because it seems very fluid and very close.
So you talk about the sort of mock drafts. There are lots of them the week of the draft. Is there a player that you think that you are much higher on than the general consensus? And then is there a player that you are much lower on than the general consensus?
Well, I wrote about him and podcasted on him. Kessler Edwards out of Pepperdine is a personal favorite of mine, just because I've talked about it a lot. I think the Sixers, it's like my problem is like, if they trade Ben, is Tobias the only player between 6'5 and 7 feet? Like, can the Sixers get a wing? who kind of fill, because that's the part of the great thing about Wayne's is that they can do a lot of stuff. They're very versatile. Also, you look at a team like the Bucks, like one of the reasons I think they won is they, as long as they didn't play Jeff Teague, so their top seven, their rotation was basically all 6'4" and up. Like there's nowhere to attack size wise. That is just like you're foolproof guarded against that with all that size they have out there. And the Sixers just, while I love Tyrese Maxey, I think Seth Curry's great. George Hill, I think still has very good value. Matisse Thybulle has the length to guard up against wings, but like just lacking that kind of size that, especially coming off the bench, like playing four guys, 6'5" and under with Dwight Howard was just kind of a little lacking. Mike Scott fell off obviously this year. Kessler Edwards out of Pepperdine is basically for 3 years. He's shot around 40% from three, and he is not just stationary shooting. He can really shoot off of movement, just running around a ton of screens, can really get at curling the shots while also, and he's standing about 6'7" of a pretty good wingspan. Like just, I like that idea of a guy I think really slots in easily as movement shooting with the size to play defense. And he has pretty good defensive positional awareness. Obviously needs to change his competition where basically the only high leverage teams he was playing on the regular were Gonzaga and BYU. But I think Kessler Edwards out of Pepperdine is someone I would love to see the Sixers take at 28. This is the different disagreeing thing. Draft Twitter generally has Kessler as a very good prospect, like probably top 20. You look at the mainstream boards, he's much more likely you think a guy who might slip to 50 at the six for the Sixers right. than anything else. So I have no idea where he's going to go. I think he's good enough to be picked at 28, and I would like it. I'm a little worried he's going to go in between 28 and 50, and I won't get it. But like, he's really, really good in my eyes.
And what about a guy that you think is not as good as they're being projected generally?
I definitely have some that I could say. Miles, I talked a little bit. I had the one podcast with CJ Marchesani on Deuce McBride out of West Virginia, who I was a little lower on, but he kind of talked. He had a really good argument for why he was, because like Deuce was basically put in a system where he did not have a lot of good offensive talent or scheme around him and was asked to do a lot of stuff. Kind of like my Shake Milton argument, like someone has to take those tough shots and he's being asked to do that, which kind of helped show me like why I did. You know, I'll talk about one because it's weird. He was probably being underrated at first. He's risen up a ton in the, during the draft process where he's now like the most recent mock I saw had him going 15 to the Wizards, which is a guy I first saw on Trey Murphy out of Virginia, who is good. And like, if the Sixers take him at 28, if he's still there, which given the latest intel seems like it's not going to happen, but if the Sixers took him at 28, like it wouldn't be my favorite pick. I wouldn't hate it. Like again, it's about 6'9", shot really well from three this past year, about 44%, much more of a stationary shooter than Edwards. Cause Trey's very much like, I am open. I've already like jump stop. I'm set right here and I'm shooting, which does have value, but it's like, you're just a more valuable shooter if you can be moving around the court all the time, which he can't really do yet. And he doesn't really have the handle then to maybe do stuff from there on out. I think he's just a little less versatile than Kessler in that sense. But, and that's kind of the main thing is that I just like, I really love those kind of wings where it just feels like you can slot them in wherever and they will not hurt you. They are going to give you some value as long as they like make a couple threes each game. But I think Trey Murphy just might have some more trouble getting his shot off without that versatility. And again, like if he's at 28 for the Sixers, that feels like the right range for him. But where he's being currently mocked is like 15 or the board. Did you guys see that report? The Warriors had like four prospects in today. And it was like, quote, whoever wins this workout is going to be the pick. It was like a threat.
That's a good way to handle it.
Dude, I just like, is it like a prospect death match? Like it was
the anti-Fultz, because Fultz came in and he played like shit. And they were like, we like him. He's ours.
Maybe they should play rock, paper, scissors.
Come on.
And then whoever wins that is who gets to be the pick.
Now we're birds.
They get asked which kind of tree they are.
Yeah.
But yes, Trey's a guy who I think like good, but I think he's probably a little too high for where he's projected to go right now.
So you mentioned Kessler Edwards and Deuce McBride and Trey Murphy. Right now we're going to go rapid fire. We're going to give you different prospects that have at some point been mocked to the Sixers in some way or another. And we want some quick thoughts about them overall as prospects and their potential fit on the Sixers. So we'll just go around and around. So first, I'll go with Jared Butler, who we
Jared's really good. And just so I've said it on multiple pods now on Liberty Ballers feed, but Jared was like he had a heart condition before, which some people worried like he might not be able to, NBA might not clear him to play because he had been red flagged for that. They did clear him to play. does mean that some NBA front offices might say, hey, we might not want to take him just because this could pop up in the future. He does have this underlying condition. So that's just one thing to note for him. But yeah, played at Baylor for a while, about 6'3", 6'4", in shoes, and really just like an awesome combo guard who fills both roles pretty effortlessly. He, on the ball, he's got really shifty handles. Like his crossovers, his spins are just all so tight, so mechanically correct. He does the thing, like I think it's one of my friends, Noah, which is at the NBA Underground on Twitter, like I said, it's what makes Shai Gilgeous-Alexander so good, is that almost every move looks the same. So at least at one part, so it's hard to guess what it is. Jared Butler does the same kind of thing where he sets up moves so well with like his movements. And then off ball, he's like a very good off ball mover, has a kind of smart Danny Green like cuts to the corner where he just knows where to find space and then can set himself pretty quickly and shoot. So just again, like, because I prefer like the Sixers taking a wing at 28, because I think they could use another wing, and just it's easier to bet on wings later down the draft, because, you know, guards and centers are a little more replaceable in terms of finding value, as whereas wings are a little bit harder to find. And so I think that's what I prefer. But Jared Butler, I think, is one of those few that I could talk myself into, because he does have the ability to make some advantage creation, which the Sixers desperately need. But he's also versatile enough that you can play him in a lot of different lineups. So like that's just my main self. I'm just like, I'm looking for it's like my whole theme is like the Sixers, I said, they need to get more versatile. Like it's what the Bucks did that helped them win. The Sixers, I want them to get more versatile. And I think Jared Butler is probably the most versatile guard. Unfortunately, like again, since he's been cleared from the condition, there's a good chance he gets taken earlier than 28, because, you know, teams that need guards like the Lakers are like, oh, we could like Jared Butler. So like it might be hard of that. But like, again, if he's there at 28, I'd be very happy with Jared Butler in a Sixers uniform.
I have to say, if we want Jared Butler to be healthy, which I do, then the Sixers probably should not take him, because
that's a great
we
point.
We don't have a great track record with health conditions. So I would like him to stay healthy. So
does he want any allergies?
I mean, yeah, it's very scary over in Sixers land. But number two, Trey Mann.
Okay, yeah, Trey's another guy who I don't know if he's going to be there at 28, because I think some people are, and he's probably one that I'm a little bit lower on, because I think of Trey Mann is that, whereas Jared Butler, I think he has enough tertiary skills that even if the shots aren't going in at a super high rate, he's still going to be good. I worry that Trey Mann, the thing is, he has to make off the dribble jumpers, which he's very good at, to be good. Because that's really the main sell he brings. That he probably has, like, it's hilarious, like some of the screenshots you can get of him where he goes into like a crossover. I call it like a cross back three, where he has his one leg leaning forward, he crosses back, and like he is so like able to stop on a dime that guys just go flying, like not even ankle breakers, but just like the space he creates is insane. He's probably the best at that in the draft, and that's a very valuable skill. So if you're trying to hit like an upside swing like that, like that's a very good guy to target. I don't think his passing's that great yet. He has this weird thing where he like only passes with one hand a lot of the time, where it feels more just like a weird neck. Like he's not like there's some guys who do it because they're like creating something else. Like obviously like Nikola Jokic will hold the ball from one hand, but that's because he's like a three-dimensional chess master where he's throwing it through angles you can't even see. So why did I say it should be four-dimensional, three-dimensional? We already have three-dimensional chess. But no, like Trey Mann, like
I thought chess is just two-dimensional.
Whatever, but
I mean, you have
the analogy lost. But Trey Mann defensively, he's a little he gets a little lost off ball. Again, he's not a horrible defender, but it's again very guy, like since he's a smaller, very thin guy, and I don't think his like has absurd like instincts on that end. He's one of those guys where it has to be perfect in terms of awareness and rotationally just to like not get be a liability, which is a lot to ask. But that's my big thing, Trey. It's just like, and he's not a big off ball mover like Jared Butler either, where he can be very good, and I think he definitely probably has a little more upside than a guy like Jared Butler, but you're asking him then basically to do some very difficult things to be better than, which is to succeed. He has to make those off the dribble threes, which is hard to do. He has to be like very positionally accurate on defense, which is hard to do. So it's just asking a lot. If he's at 28, again, I'm not going to hate it. I'm not a huge fan of taking smaller guards later down in the draft, because usually the best ones, the ones who are very explosive, like get taken lottery, or you get a guy like Tyrese Maxey, you should have gone lottery and fell.
So here's a guy who I've seen play twice. I think he's really bad and can't dribble, but he's really handsome. What do you think of Ayo Dosunmu?
Ayo's interesting. I cover like I watch a lot of Big Ten basketball because I'm right inside you. And I mean, Io's beloved by Big Ten fans, or at least feared, because he had a knack for like this past season. Like Illinois would always do this weird thing where they'd be down by like 10 with 5 minutes to go, then he'd score like 14 in a row. Very good college guard. And I like Io a lot, especially like he seems like a great person, a really cool guy. He got a bad face injury in the season, wore the black mask thing. He looked awesome. He looked super cool.
Like Joel. Yeah.
Io does have very good vibes. I will give him that. It is a little bit hard, like the same thing where he relies on the fact that he's a bigger guard at like 6'5", 6'6", and getting his shot up over people. And his shot, even though he shot really well from three this past year, he had not shot well before that. So it's like, is that an outlier kind of year where you're not really trusting that? Again, like one of those guys similar to Trey, man, very different players, but the similar thing of like they have to make a lot of tough shots, it feels like, to be viable. And you're drafting basically a backup guard who he does have the size enough to at least maybe guard up a few positions, but like he doesn't have the quickness or burst of someone like Matisse, who's like just, which is almost unfair because it's like, yeah, Matisse is ridiculous. Like Matisse is one of the best like agility athletes in the NBA at his size. But I know what mock you're talking about, I think, which was, I think it was The Athletic where they had Sam Mancini, who I love, had Io going to the Sixers, which my big problem with that was that Sharif Cooper was at 29 than the mock, who I would prefer Sharif, who, again, much smaller guards, it might not make sense, but Sharif has a case as maybe the best passer in the draft, which I kind of, as a team like the Sixers, I always think could use better passers. Like, that would be very interesting. Io is a guy I would prefer him more. It's like, say the Sixers traded up from 50 after trading away 28 or something. If he's in like the 30s or 40s, I'm fine with it. I do see the vision, but like I don't think I can get on board with Io first round. I do think, and you said your point about he can't dribble, but I think he can dribble, but like you're saying, not as well as he needs to for the role he'd probably play in the NBA, at least at this point.
All right, the next one is, well, two questions. One, it's what can you tell us about Bones Highland? And two, does he have the coolest nickname in this draft?
He's definitely up there. The full name is Busy Bones, I think it is. But he's a really cool
even guy. Better.
Yeah, and like there's also like, I mean, I already mentioned, I just, people call like, and he, both him and Miles McBride, who's called Deuce McBride, everyone, they're the two, like their nicknames are so well known, it's like just recognize that that's Deuce, that's Bones. So definitely,
I tried to look up how to say Bones' first given like first name, but every interview I watched, they were like, Bones, how are you? So I was like, we're just going with Bones.
Yeah, it's pretty Nashawn Highland for those who are wondering. Yeah. Bones is a very high shooting upside swing, where I haven't watched enough Bones, and I actually prepared it. I think I'm going to do that like in these upcoming days, a few more games to him. Dude takes some really hard shots, but he makes some of those really hard shots. Like he legit will shoot double step backs from like 40 feet, like Dame Lillard, and he'll occasionally make them. Is that
Isaiah Joe vibes?
I mean, Isaiah shoots contested threes. Isaiah doesn't have the handle to do that, really, all those complicated step backs. And I still like Isaiah Joe, but
quickly, no. I just want to interject with, when you said I haven't watched enough Bones, I was thinking you're talking about the David Boreanaz show. Okay. Go ahead.
I haven't watched that either, so it's still accurate. Bones is like very skinny, very, very skinny. Has a long wingspan and can get a lot of deflections, although he probably relies on that too much because it's like his whole defensive shtick is like, I'm going to gun for a steal here because I have really long arms. I don't know. Again, I need to watch him more to know if I pick him at 28. I would not hate it because, again, I see the vision just like he can make some really ridiculous shots. And I don't know if the similar thing I've said before, like, at this point in the draft, like you're betting on a guy doing probably the toughest job in the NBA to be truly successful and making those tough off the dribble shots, but he has shown a propensity to do it. So I'm a general fan of Bones Highland. I would say like you said, the nickname is awesome.
All right. So what do you think of Isaiah Jackson?
I've not watched much of Isaiah, and part of the reason why is that not really a Sixers guy, I would think, cause he's basically a center. He's like got some athletic rim running tools, I know. Definitely needs to develop his feel. There's a hilarious clip I've seen before of him in high school where he was basically, because they would like his team would play him at the top of some full court press, and like they're playing a really unathletic team once, and he got like 5 steals in a row. But yeah, like just generally, like he's just generally one of those guys who I'm like, the Sixers aren't gonna pick him, and I don't think it makes sense to the Sixers. So I'm like,
what would you think value wise about taking a center, whoever it might be, at the end of the first round? Like, would you think, obviously the Sixers have a starter at center and they also have a B-ball Paul at center if they want. Would you think that would be strange value to select somebody who is certainly a backup, or do you think that if the player is there, you would do it?
Well, I'm fine taking, like, I mean, my whole pitch has been like Kessler Edwards, the thing is, like, I think he's the perfect backup four for them. That's not the problem. The problem is that, again, like, centers, like, we saw this last year, even though Dwight was bad in the playoffs, like, you can get, like, useful NBA centers for, like, minimum contracts as your bench guys. You don't have to spend draft capital on them. And then additionally, like, I'm probably not interested in, like, a Sixers center prospect who can't really shoot at this point, especially given the construction of their team. I mean, I've looked at backup center options, but it's just really, man, it's really hard with like certain centers at some point, like to, after you get past the cream of the crop that usually go in the top 20, like the movement skills really dissipate. Like two guys I looked at, like Luka Garza and Matthew Hurt. I know Garza's name came up. Both are like, Matthew Hurt's a ridiculously good shooter. Dude can't slide his feet. So I don't see how it's ever going to work. And Luka Garza, can really mash dudes inside. Great college player. Very fun to watch. And if he can really hurt people in pick and pop defense, but just again, like it's my big thing. It's like, if you don't have movement skills with the ball in your hand or then without for defense, like I get really worried about how it ever works. So it would not be my choice. If I could take 2 6'7" up wings for the Sixers, or at least 6'6" up wings, I would do, like, probably my dream draft for the Sixers in a way is maybe Kessler Edwards at 28 and Isaiah Livers out of Michigan at 50.
Okay.
He's a shooting wing. I've wrote about him a few months back during the season. So just like, cause I think that's two guys who I think legitimately, with their wing size and with their shooting ability and movement skills, could probably play for the Sixers.
So we've got two left. Cam Thomas.
I talked with some of my friends today about Cam Thomas, because Cam Thomas is like what a lot of those people on Twitter call a real hooper, because he takes a lot of shots, gets a lot of draws a lot of free throws, very willing to shoot, and he can really score. He has this weird thing where he's right-handed. He is almost always driving to his left, and he holds the body on his ball on his left side of his body as he goes up, like, the whole way through. It's weird. It looks weird. It's very jarring to see at first. And he also, like, he points his, like, so, like, say he's coming up for a shot from, like, the wing, his, like, feet are both directly pointed at the opposite sideline as he's rising up. He turns his body in midair very impressively. He's very athletic. And honestly, one of my favorite traits about him is, like, when he drives to the rim, he's a powerful dude with his, and his strength. Like, he can, despite not being the tallest guy, he can move dudes out of the way with his strength and get to the rim for finishes. And again, like, he draws a ton of free throws, partially due to that strength and being able to get to the rim. Also partially due to the fact that he's like a Trae Young, Danilo Gallinari level of no shame grifter, where, like, he feels anyone near him, he's going to flail his arms. See what he knows, he can get those foul shots, which, I mean, has value. It has value.
Yeah.
My thing is, though, Cam, like, just, and it's hard to say because LSU as a team was kind of like this, but man, Cam, first of all, he's not looking to pass. He's basically going to shoot on every possession. Defensively, again, LSU is horrible. Cam is really bad on defense. I think he's okay in certain situations, the half court. He might be the worst transition defender I've ever watched, and I'm not even trying to exaggerate.
He's going
to
fit right in. I love it.
He
sounds like the legit opposite, exact opposite of Ben Simmons. Like, like, won't pass, always shoot.
They both went to LSU.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
He does this weird thing where guys will be coming out in transition. He's not even, like, faking, or he, like, does the fake, like, you know, I'm trying to think. So if you guys ever played high school basketball, there will always be the guy who, it's the most annoying thing, and it's worse when it's a guy with long arms so he can actually do it, purposely lets you drive by them so they can swap, like, reach around and hit the ball out of your hands.
Covington used to do that.
Yeah, but, like, Covington's a good defender, again, like, long arms, so Covington can do it. Cam's not anywhere close to that, and he, like, doesn't even really do that. He just kind of, like, half-heartedly swipes like this. Like, it's almost like he's making a defensive line swim move on the player, but, like, pushing them towards the basket. He doesn't play transition defense. So like his best role in the NBA is probably if some team can get him to buy into an off-ball role, because the way he can get shots off and he can shoot off movement and he can shoot, all those things are good. So if they can get him to buy into a lower usage role as a smaller off-ball shooter, he can be a good NBA player. But the Sixers already have Seth Curry who fulfills that role. So I'm kind of like, I think I can at least see, like, I'm not a big Cam Thomas fan, but I could see what value adds to certain teams. But the Sixers already have that role filled, so he wouldn't be my pick.
All right, and last one that we have, Quentin Grimes.
Yeah, I haven't watched enough of Quentin, although I'm pretty sure so. This is...
Anticlimactic last one, then. Damn.
Yeah, I know. My bad. But, no, Quentin, I did get to see some of Houston in the tournament. Like, I know the appeal of, like, basically a shooter. I actually have the ESPN mock draft pulled up right now. Let me scroll to the bottom here. Yeah, like, I mean, at least the fit here, I disagree with, like, the general pitch that's being given, which is just the Sixers need as much three-point shooting as possible. And, yeah, obviously, like, that's good. I don't think the lack of overall shooting is what killed the Sixers more than just, like, again, I think it's the certain versatility, certain guard play. And he's, like, an older guard at that, too. I do know he definitely has some defensive ability that could be interesting, too. But, I mean, it's just my general philosophy, like, basically, I'm at the point where I'm like, I want the Sixers to take a wing with some shoot. I want the Sixers to either take a wing at 28, or I want them to take Jared Butler if he falls. Because again, I'm just very in on that whole versatile shooter, capable defender kind of archetype.
So before we get out of here, you mentioned Isaiah Livers as somebody that you would like to see the Sixers draft. You want to talk about him for a second?
Yeah, definitely an older player, but much older. I think he's a senior at Michigan this past year. Fit very well within their system. He doesn't move as fast as some movement shooters, but he can come off of weird angles and shoot, and shoots in the face of contests pretty effortlessly. Defensively, definitely knows where he's doing, has the strength to, like, not get bullied by guys. His foot speed isn't great, but I think on a team like the Sixers with some very fast defenders, he can get away with that. Honestly, the more I think about it, he has some Danny Green similarities, just as, like, that. Like, you know, not the most physically capable guy. I think he can dribble a little more than Danny, but, like, not a ton. But, like, a guy who has smart instincts for when to space to three and was willing to shoot, gets the shot off, and is a good shooter. And then defensively, with his strength, size, and, like, positional know-how, he's pretty solid, man. And I think I've seen him as low as 50. So if he's there at 50, I think that's just a good guy to bet on. It's like, I think he can get in your rotation.
To the three of you, do we have anything else on the draft before we let Daniel go on with his night and before we all leave? Anything?
I don't know anything about the draft besides what Dan just told me. So.
Well, that's the sum total of our knowledge. Emily, you too?
Yeah.
Yeah, but here's the thing. From everything, we have everything. I think this was a very good draft primer because we have both sides of it, which is like if the Sixers actually make their picks, we heard from Dan, who has watched the guys, and he knows maybe who we want to pick. And we'll obviously have, you know, some thoughts on it on draft night. And then we have the element of, you know, potential Sixers trades that maybe come due on draft night, which is, you know, namely Bradley Beal. And we have that element from Jake. So I think that I've learned a lot today about the Sixers draft night in total.
So I will say this serves as a nice appetizer for Thursday night, which we're doing another Liberty. We've talked about this on here, but we're doing another Liberty Ballers live stream. It will go up as a Talking About podcast. Dan and Sean and Tyler and I'm not sure how much draft stuff Tom and Harrison get into, but we'll be there. Emily, Dan Volpone, and I will be rating their attractiveness, the each draft prospect, as we are wont to do. And Daniel Olinger himself, are you going to be grading every pick again?
I don't know if I'll be grading every pick. I can definitely give thoughts on every pick.
For sure. Okay. You'll have to watch or listen to find out if he's going to give grades. Definitely come to that on YouTube, or definitely listen to it afterwards. I think that's it for us. We want to thank Jake Fisher, first of all, for coming on earliest in this podcast this morning for us after his report came out. Giant thank you to Daniel Olinger for coming on. Listen to Dan on the Talking About podcast with Sean. That's a really great podcast. And, of course, the Sixers Draft podcast, which has one more episode, I believe, coming out this week, right?
Yeah, me and my guy Francis talked about Sam Houser out of Virginia. So if you want to hear about him, like, yeah.
Great. So that comes out. What do we do? Wednesday or Thursday for that?
You're the podcast director, man. I just give you.
Yeah, Steve, come on.
Listen, it'll be out at some point. We'll all enjoy it.
I want to say one thing real quick, because I've given Daniel Olinger this compliment, like, privately, but I haven't said it publicly, which is, and I think a lot of people who listen to this podcast are probably listening to all of Dan's podcasts as well. But just in case you're not, I think Dan is, like, so enjoyable to listen to talk about basketball, because he, I think he really explains things that, like, either I would never be able to put into words really, like, and he says it really well, or like something I would not notice, whether it's, you know, a certain, like, very minor skill or like X's and O's stuff that I literally just don't know. And he explains it in a way that I think is, like, really easy to understand, but doesn't sound like he's, like, talking down to you. So I think he's just, like, a great guy to listen to when he does podcasts or whatever he writes to just learn more about the game. And I really enjoy him in that respect. So you should definitely check out all the work he's doing.
Well, thanks for that. It's really great to hear very kind words. Yeah, I really appreciate it. I love listening to you guys too. I mean, like, also, like, I mean, I think I know a lot about basketball, but you guys, like, I was praising versatility all podcasts. Like, you guys are versatile. Like, I can never do anything about The Bachelor or The Bachelorette. Like, that is right. Versatility. That is versatility right there.
Like, hey, new episode when this comes out. So very exciting.
I have no clue. I have still never watched
it. Dan, it's hometowns. Come on.
It's hometowns.
What does I
might
that mean?
Make you, I
what
might does that make mean? You do a Bachelor podcast with us. I might just sort of tell you that we're going to talk about Jared Butler, and then just say, let's talk about how Justin made the Final Four. And
stuff. I think we should do it for Paradise, and we can play a game of, like, did this or did this not happen?
Mm-hmm. I think that's good.
Because we love games on this podcast. We love games.
Yes,
we do. And congratulations to Emily. Very happy for you and excited for you. And
thank you.
Great to see you guys. And we will see you guys all on Thursday night when everything might be different or it might all be the same. The ending always takes a long time to actually end the podcast. Good to see you all. Be safe and be great. Goodbye.
See ya.
Hola!